An old charwoman, Mrs. McGinty, had been savagely murdered for a paltry sum of money. Her lodger, James Bentley, had been convicted of the crime and sentenced to death. But Superintendent Spence was not convinced of his guilt and asked me to go down to Broadhinney, the village where she had lived, to investigate further. I became certain that the murder was linked to an article in a Sunday paper about women who had been involved in notorious murder cases. I suspected that one of them might be living in Broadhinney, and I had asked the superintendent to find out more about them.
John Moffat as Hercule Poirot, Julia McKenzie as Ariadne Oliver, and George Baker as Superintendent Spence in Agatha Christie's Mrs. McGinty's Dead.
I've managed to get hold of a few more photographs, but they're not much of an improvement. The hairstyles don't help. Just look at Vera Blake.
I think we can probably eliminate Vera Blake.
You're probably right. If she'd come back from abroad, everybody in Broadhinney would soon have heard about it. Telling the sad story of her life seems to have been her speciality.
Do you have any more information about the others?
Eva Kane. I found the name she took when she left the country after Craig was sentenced to death. It was Hope. Symbolic, do you think?
Perhaps she liked poetry. Beautiful Evelyn Hope is dead. Was her name Evelyn, in fact?
It was, but nobody seems to have called her anything but Eva. The Sunday Comet made her out to be a wide-eyed innocent who never suspected that Craig had murdered his wife. But I've been going through the file, and police opinion was very different. Inspector Trail, he was my old chief when I joined the force, thought that putting Mrs. Craig out of the way was her idea. She might even have done it.
She murdered Mrs. Craig? What made him think that?
Trail reckoned that Craig came home from work one day and found that pretty little Miss Kane had taken a shortcut. I dare say she thought it might be passed off as accidental death. But Craig got the wind up, buried the body in the cellar, and told everyone his wife had gone abroad for her health. Of course, when it all came out, he swore blind the girl had nothing to do with it. And she was a very clever little actress.
And she was carrying Craig's child?
That's right.
So, she was not a tragic victim, but a murderess. And if the incentive was strong enough, she might kill again. And what about the child, Lily Gamble?
She was too young to be charged with murder. They packed her off to an approved school where she did quite well for herself. Last heard of, somewhere in Ireland. I'd have thought we could rule her out.
I think not. You have forgotten the weapon with which Mrs. McGinty was killed, my friend.
But we never found it. I told you, surely.
But it was something like a meat chopper. And that was the weapon with which Lily Gamble struck down her aunt.
Oh, I see what you mean. So tell me, what are the possibilities of any of these women living in Broadhinney?
And if Eva Kane is still alive, she would be about 60, and her daughter...
How do we know it was a daughter?
The Sunday Comet said so. Her daughter would be about 30.
So how does that square with the women Mrs. McGinty worked for?
As far as age goes, Mrs. Weatherby would be about right for Eva Kane, and her daughter, by a previous marriage to a Mr. Henderson, would also be the right age. And I will tell you this. Mrs. Weatherby has been most decidedly a pretty woman. She seems much too frightened and helpless to commit a murder, but...
But that's what they said about Eva Kane. Any other possibilities?
Mrs. Upward is the right age, but she suffers from arthritis and spends most of her time in a wheeled chair.
In a book, of course, she would almost certainly turn out to be the murderer.
Oh, yes.
And the wheeled chair business would be a phony. But I agree, she's pretty unlikely. Any candidates for Lily Gamble?
Well, there are three women in their early 30s. Deirdre Henderson, Sheila Rendell, the doctor's wife, and Mrs. Carpenter. And I will tell you this, my friend. Mrs. Carpenter is afraid of something. I went to see her yesterday, and I happened to mention the Sunday Comet. Instantly, she ran back to the house to call her husband, but she could not find her way through the French windows. She reminded me of a lovely fluttering moth, unable to see where she was going with those beautiful blue eyes of hers.
A proper romantic, that's what you are, Poirot. Beautiful blue eyes, indeed.
No. I do not allow myself to be deceived by sentiment like my good friend Hastings. Let me tell you this. If a woman's claim to beauty depends on the loveliness of her eyes, no matter how short-sighted she is, she will not wear glasses. Now look at the photograph of Lily Gamble. Look at those thick, ugly spectacles.
So you think Mrs. Carpenter may be Lily Gamble?
I only suggest it as a possibility. At the time of Mrs. McGinty's death, Mrs. Carpenter was Mrs. Selkirk, a war widow, very badly off. She would have done anything to suppress the evidence of her past in order to marry the wealthy Mr. Carpenter.
It's possible, I suppose, but it's all just conjecture.
I agree, my friend, and the field is still wide open. Suppose that it is Mrs. Upward who is Eva Kane. She is stricken with arthritis, but she has the determination and willpower to overcome her disability. And she dotes upon her son. She might kill to prevent him finding out the truth.
I thought Eva Kane was supposed to have had a daughter. And in any case, would the truth upset Robin Upward very much?
Probably not. He might even capitalize on it. Famous playwright, the son of a notorious murderer. Ah, but there are so many possibilities.
So many possibilities, Monsieur Poirot, and so little time. Every minute we spend chewing over who might be who is 1 minute nearer the gallows for James Bentley.
I waited at the station at Kilchester for the train to take me back to Brodhinny. It was market day, and the platform was very crowded. And then someone pushed me violently in the small of the back. And if the man beside me had not caught hold of me, I would assuredly have fallen in front of the incoming train.
Are you all right?
Thank you. Thank you. I am most grateful.
What happened? Did you have a dizzy spell?
Spence?
Listen, my friend, I have news for you. Splendid news. Somebody has tried to kill me.
Kill you? How do you mean?
At the station. As the train was coming into the platform, somebody tried to push me in front of it.
I thought something like this might happen. Are you all right?
Perfectly all right, but it was a very near thing.
Did you see who did it?
No, I have no idea who it was. But be assured, my friend, I shall find out. It can only be somebody I interviewed in Brodhinny. So, now we know we are on the right track.
What we need, Ariadne, is to get more sex into it.
I beg your pardon.
But it needs pepping up a bit. You see, after Sven's parachuted down...
But he's 60!
He can't be. I don't see him like that at all. Late 30s at the very most.
But I've been writing books about Sven Hyrson for 30 years, and he was 35 when I started.
If he's 60, we can't possibly develop the sexual antagonism between him and Ingrid. It would just make him a dirty old man.
Yes, well, Sven Hyrson never cared for women much anyway.
But we can't let him be a pansy, darling. It's not that kind of play. It's mystery and excitement and good, clean, open-air fun.
I think I could do with a bit of open air myself. I'm going out for a walk.
Shall I come with you, darling?
No. I'll be perfectly all right on my own, thanks.
In that case, I'll go and whip up an eggnog for Marjorie. The poor darling's feeling a teeny-weeny bit left out of things. She does like a bit of attention, you know. Oh, and while you're out, think about that scene in the cellar. You need to have a bit more of a frisson, don't you agree? But the whole thing is really going to be tremendously exciting, so long as you feel happy about it, darling. It's all that matters.
3 pounds of apples. A bit over three, is that all right?
Perfectly all right.
Oh, thank you very much. And fourpence change. You'll be the lady from London who writes the detective stories.
That's right.
We got 3 of them on the stand there. Very popular they are.
The affair of the 7 goldfish, well, that wasn't at all bad. the cat it was that died. I came rather a cropper over that one. I made a terrible howler about a blowpipe. A man wrote from a museum to correct me.
Well, I reckon some people only read books hoping to find mistakes in them.
You had a murder of your own down here, didn't you?
Yes, last November. Almost next door, you might say. You're staying at the Burnhams, aren't you?
Yes, with Mrs. Upward. Must be a terrible trial for the poor soul, confined to that invalid chair all the time.
Oh, she can get about when she wants to, so I've heard. She likes to make people put themselves out for her, particularly that son of hers. Oh, good morning, Miss Anderson. Warm
morning.
For the time of year, isn't it?
Yes, it is, rather.
Means the fruit blossom will get nipped later. What can I do for you?
I'd like a 5-shilling book of stamps, please.
Yes, certainly. How's Mrs. Weatherby keeping?
Pretty well, thank you. She hasn't been out much, though.
Well, there's a good picture on in Kilchester this week. You ought to go.
I did think of going last night, but Mother didn't want to be left on her own.
It's Betty Grable next week. I'm out of 5-shilling books. Will 2 half-crown ones do?
Yes, that's perfectly right. Thank you. I'd better be off.
Bye.
I'd better be on my way, too. Thank you very much, Mrs. Sweetman.
A pleasure, ma'am.
I wonder if you can help me.
Yes?
I want to get back to Laburnum's, and I rather lost my bearings.
Well, it's quite easy, really. Take the next road to your right and follow it up the hill.
Oh, of course. So stupid of me.
You're Ariadne Oliver, aren't you?
Yes, that's right.
Robin told us you were coming. I must tell you, I really do enjoy your books.
Oh, thank you. I'm really very glad.
I haven't read as many as I'd like because we only get our books sent from the Times Book Club and Mother doesn't like detective stories. She's a bit of an invalid and frightfully sensitive and they keep her awake at nights, but I like a good murder.
Mrs. Sweetman was telling me about the murder you had down here last year. Which house was it? One of those cottages?
Yeah, that one there.
It doesn't look like a house where there's been a murder, does it?
I suppose not.
It was an old charwoman, wasn't it? Somebody robbed her of her savings.
She had some money under the floor. They said her lodger had done it, James Bentley, but now there seems to be some doubt about it. There's a funny little man down here. French, I think he is.
Belgian, actually. Hercule Poirot. I know all about him.
Is he really a detective?
Oh, yes. He's quite celebrated and frightfully clever.
Then perhaps he'll find out that James Bentley didn't do it after all. I hope he does.
What makes you say that?
Because I never believed he could have done a thing like that.
Did you know him?
No, not really. My dog got his foot caught in a trap once and he got him free.
What was he like?
He was dreadfully lonely. His mother had just died and he was very fond of her.
And are you very fond of yours?
Yes, I am. That's what helped me to understand what he felt. Mother and I, well, we've just got one another, you see.
I thought somebody told me you had a stepfather.
Oh, yes, I've got a stepfather, all right.
But of course it's not the same thing as one's own father.
My father died before I was born, and Mother married Mr. Weatherby when I was 4 years old. I've never liked him. He doesn't show my mother the least sympathy or understanding. But I don't know why I'm telling you all this. I must go. The German girl we've got is absolutely hopeless. I'm sure she won't have given Mother her lunch.
Bye. Well, at least that's one person I can cross off my list. Not Deirdre Henderson.
More apples, Ariadne. I've never known anyone with such a passion for apples.
I need them to keep body and soul together.
This is Eve Carpenter, Ariadne. Her husband is going to be our next MP. The present one is quite gaga, poor old man.
Robin, you mustn't invent such terrible lies. I'm so glad to meet you, Mrs. Oliver. I was hoping you could come round for drinks this evening.
Well,
it's a special party for you, Ariadne. You know, meet the Queen of Crime.
We're all so terribly thrilled to have you here. Can't you make Broadhinny the scene of your next murder mystery?
Who shall we have as the victim?
Who is your present charwoman?
No, we don't want anything like that. I think Eve would make a much better corpse, strangled with her own nylon stockings.
I think it would be better if you were to be murdered, Robin, the famous playwright stabbed to death in his country cottage.
But who would the murderer be? What about the Madre, using her wheeled chair so there wouldn't be any footprints?
But she'd never want to harm you, Robin.
No, perhaps you're right. As a matter of fact, I was thinking of her strangling you. She wouldn't mind doing that.
But I want you to be the victim. And I've got the perfect murderer. Deirdre Henderson, the plain, repressed girl who nobody notices.
Well, there you are, Ariadne. The whole plot of your next novel presented to you on a plate.
Do you think you could persuade your friend, Mr. Poirot, to come along to my party as well, Mrs. Oliver? You see, I'm a bit worried about inviting him myself, because I was rather rude to him yesterday. I had no idea he was a famous detective.
Oh, I'm sure he'd love to come.
I wouldn't have thought he'd turn down the opportunity to observe the leading lights of Broadhinny letting their hair down. It could be the turning point of his investigation.
The gin flowed freely, and under its influence, an intriguing transformation took place. Mrs. Carpenter became rather arch and flirtatious.
I'm sure you must have thought I was quite frightful, Mr. Poirot. You see, at first I thought you were some kind of salesman. And then I became quite convinced you were going to try and whip up some kind of scandal for the Sunday Comet.
Dr. Hendel glowed with self-satisfaction, and his wife was positively affable.
I do adore your books, Mrs. Oliver. Where do you get all your story ideas from? Does Monsieur Poirot supply you with details of his case histories?
For a while, Mrs. Oliver and I were each the center of an admiring circle, but we soon ceased to be a novelty. The conversation changed from crime to scandal. Old friends got together to tell one another the intrigues and infidelities of Broadhinny, and Mrs. Oliver and I were left to our own devices.
Come out onto the terrace. I want to tell you something.
So what is it, madame?
Dr. Rendell.
What about Dr. Rendell?
He's the murderer.
You are sure of that?
Certainly. My intuition never lets me down. He's just the type. Hearty and genial, with his smile always firmly in place.
And what would you say was his motive?
Unprofessional conduct. And Mrs. McGinty got to know about it. Oh, whatever the reason was, you can be sure it was him.
Yesterday afternoon, somebody tried to push me onto the railway line at Kilchester Station.
What? You mean somebody tried to kill you?
I have no doubt that was the general idea.
Settles it. Dr. Rendell was out on case. I know he was.
And Mr. and Mrs. Carpenter were both in Kilchester at that time and came home separately. Mrs. Rendell says she was at home listening to the radio, but who knows?
Well, I think I can vouch for our lot. Robin, his mother, and I were playing poker patience.
And Mrs. Summerhayes was cooking my supper. Oh, it was execrable. But then, so is everything at Long Meadows. The draughts, the upset stomachs of the cats, the smell of the pigs, the tepid water in the bathroom, and the coffee. Oh, words cannot describe the fluid they serve as coffee. It is an affront to the stomach.
But she seems an awfully nice woman.
Oh, yes, she is utterly charming. That's what makes it so difficult.
Shh, 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 she's coming.
Oh.
I think I'm a tiny bit tiddly. Oh, such a lot of lovely gin. I do like parties, and this one is entirely due to you two. We don't often have celebrities in Broadhinny. I do wish I could write books like you, Mrs. Oliver. The trouble with me is that I can't do anything properly.
You are a good wife and mother, madame.
Am I? I love them all terribly, but is that enough?
If you will not think me presumptuous, madame, a wife who truly loves her husband should take care of his stomach. It is important, the stomach.
Really? I never think it matters much what one eats.
Oh,
or what one wears, or what one does with one's hair.
Really?
I don't think anything matters except happiness. I read a really stupid letter in the paper the other day. Some woman wanted to know which it was best to do.
To let your child be adopted by someone who could give it every advantage, a good education, clothes, holidays, that sort of thing. Or to let the child stay in the family no matter how badly off they were.
And what did you think?
Give a child a real home and lots of love and plenty to eat. That's all that matters. I ought to know. I was an adopted child. I had every advantage, like that woman says, and I was utterly miserable. It's always hurt. Always. To know that you weren't really wanted and that your mother could let you go.
Perhaps it was a sacrifice for your good, madame.
I don't think that's ever true. I wouldn't give up my children, not for all the so-called advantages in the world.
Oh, so that's where you've got to. You're looking terribly serious. May one ask what you're talking about?
Adoption. I don't like being adopted, do you?
Well, it's much better than being an orphan, don't you think, darling? I hate to tear Ariadne away, but we really ought to be going. The Madre was so looking forward to coming to the party, but her leg was playing her up particularly badly this evening, so she had to stay at home. I thought we might take a few friends back for a nightcap, just so she doesn't feel she's missed out too much.
Oh, what a lovely idea.
And so we all made our way up the hill to La Burnham's, where another bottle of gin was opened, and the company became even more animated.
It really is so kind of you all. Since I couldn't come to the party, Robin has brought the party back to me. Now tell me all about it. Were the Weatherbys there?
No, Mrs. Weatherby didn't feel well enough. And that dim Henderson girl wouldn't come without her.
She really is rather peculiar, isn't she?
It's almost pathological, isn't it?
I blame that mother of hers. Some mothers almost seem to eat their young, don't they?
Do I devour you, Robin?
Madre, of course you don't.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean...
Everyone seemed rather embarrassed by the turn the conversation had taken, and Mrs. Randall decided to change the subject by cross-questioning me about my investigation, and soon everybody began to join in.
Tell us all what you've been finding out, Monsieur Poirot. And if that dreary lodger of hers didn't kill her, who did?
He used to mutter to himself all the time, wandering about in the lanes. He really did look very strange.
You must have some reason to think he didn't kill her, Mr. Poirot. Did the police miss out on something?
Was it a tramp or somebody who did it? Or was it a person living in Broadhay?
Don't embarrass the poor man. He probably suspects one of us.
Well, in that case, let's find out what we're all doing on the night of the murder. When was it exactly?
November the 22nd.
Gracious, I don't know.
Nobody could know after all this time.
Well, I know, because I was doing a broadcast that night. I drove over to Coalport to give a talk on John Galsworthy, and I remember I discussed the role of the charwoman in the silver box. And the next day, I heard about Mrs. McGinty, and I wondered if the charwoman in the play had been like her.
Of course I remember now. Your mother said she would be all alone because it was Janet's night off. And I came over here after dinner to keep her company. Only, unfortunately, I couldn't make her hear.
Yes, I'd gone to bed early with a frightful headache and locked all the doors. And I wouldn't have heard you because my bedroom faces the back garden.
And the following morning, I kept wondering why Mrs. McGinty was so late. It wasn't like her at all. Oh, horrible, really, isn't it?
But you haven't told us how your investigation is going, Mr. Poirot.
If you can't tell us who did it, you might at least give us a clue.
Oh, yes, that's it. Give us a clue.
You want a clue? Then take a look at these.
What a ghastly looking hat.
Just look at that hat.
And those frightful glasses.
Is one of these photographs supposed to be the murderer, Monsieur Poirot?
Who on earth are they?
You do not recognize any of them? You do not remember ever seeing any of these faces before?
Yes, I think I do.
Which of them, Mrs. Upward?
That one.
The ghastly child with the pebble glasses.
And you have seen that photograph before? Where?
I can't remember exactly where, but I'm sure I've seen a face just like that. Quite recently.
The photograph was that of Lily Gamble. And after that, the party broke up and everyone set off back home. I began to follow them down the drive, but as I reached the gate, something made me turn back. Should I have thrown those photographs on the table? Had the drink gone to my head as it had to everyone else's?
But you must remember, darling, it's a play, not a book, and we've got to have some glamour.
From an open window, I could hear the voice of Robin Upward with occasional protest from Mrs. Oliver. I went back into the house. Mrs. Upward was sitting alone before the fire, with a rather grim look on her face.
Oh, Monsieur Poirot, you quite startled me.
I am sorry, madame. Did you think it was someone else?
Did you leave something behind?
What I feared I had left, madame, was danger.
Danger?
Danger, perhaps, to you, because you recognized one of those photographs.
I wouldn't say recognize. All these old pictures look exactly alike.
Now, listen to me, madame. I believe that Mrs. McGinty also recognized one of those photographs. And Mrs. McGinty is dead.
Mrs. McGinty's dead. How did she die? Sticking her neck out, just like I.
If you know anything, anything at all, it would be safer to tell me now.
My dear man, I'm not at all sure that I know anything. Certainly nothing so definite as a fact.
But it's...
No, it's no good. You're rushing me, Monsieur Poirot. I'm not that sort of person. I've a mind of my own, and I take time to make it up. When I come to a decision, I will act, but not before I am ready.
You are in many ways a secretive person, Mrs. Upward.
Perhaps, up to a point. Knowledge is power. Power must only be used to the right end. And you'll excuse my saying that you don't perhaps appreciate the patterns of our English country life.
In other words, I am only a damned foreigner.
I shouldn't be so rude as that.
If you do not want to talk to me, there is always Superintendent Spence.
No, Monsieur Poirot, not the police. Not at this stage.
Very well, then. You are determined to play a lone hand. But I have warned you, and do not forget what I have said. Mrs. McGinty looked at those photographs, and I believe she recognized one of them. And she paid for that with her life.
In part three of Agatha Christie's Mrs. McGinty's Dead, Hercule Poirot was played by John Moffat, Ariadne Oliver, Julia McKenzie, Superintendent Spence, George Baker, Mrs. Upward, Jill Balkan, Robin Upward, Nick Waring, Eve Carpenter, Angela Sims, Deirdre Henderson, Teresa Gallagher, Maureen Summerhays, Molly Gaisford, Mrs. Rendell, Susanna Corbett, Mrs. Sweetman, Jilly Mears. Mrs. McGinty's Dead is dramatized for radio by Michael Bakewell and directed by Enid Williams.